it's not about glamour, I guess, is what I would tell you. It's not about being seen at the front door. It's not about hanging out with artists in the back room. It's not about partying with customers. It's about being very transactional, very focused on your business. It's all business first.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Nick Chakota is the quintessential entrepreneur. Nick arrived in Montana a few short years ago with a career focused on developing real estate for religious hospitals. But Nick quickly turned his focus to the entertainment business when he bought the two most venerable music venues in Missoula, Montana. Nick completely restored the venues, adding state-of-the-art technology and renovating both. As he accomplished all this, Nick simultaneously started a mostly student-run production company and built a new 4,500-seat amphitheater. On this episode of Can Do, I'll talk with Nick about this astounding professional transformation. Thanks for listening. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. So I'd like to welcome Nick Chakota. For our listeners, he is the owner and entertainment buyer for Logjam Presents. He's also the manager and promoter and owner of the Wilma Theater, the Top Hat Lounge, Kettle House Amphitheater. I like to call him the music man of Missoula, Montana. Nice alliteration there. So I got to ask you right off the bat, Nick. You got here about 8 years ago. You have a background in developing hospitals for Catholic health systems. How did you make this transformation?
Well, you know, I developed real estate for hospitals all around the country. So I was on a plane 5 days a week for about 20 years. And my wife's from Montana. And one day we kind of looked at each other. We have three kids and said, you know, we need to make a change. The lifestyle I was leading was just not the right lifestyle for raising a family. So kind of we stepped back, and she really wanted to get back to Montana where her family was from. And she had two sisters here in Missoula. So I sold out of my position in the business. We kind of sold everything we had in Wisconsin and moved back to Montana.
So you get here, and I assume since your roots are in real estate, you start looking around at what the opportunities are, right?
Yeah. I started by purchasing the Army-Navy building, and I did a redevelopment on that project, and more in vain with my traditional career was to redevelop real estate and reposition that property for Plunk. And we did that development. Ultimately, Plunk bought the building from us. But that was my first foray into downtown real estate in Missoula.
Right. And for our listeners, Plunk is a top-notch restaurant in the heart of downtown Missoula, Montana.
Yep, correct.
That was more, you know, in your sweet spot.
It was.
But buying music venues, you know, learning how to put in the, you know, the infrastructure for music venues, beginning to book talent, running a restaurant. You'd never run a restaurant before, right?
I had.
And you have one of the top menus in town at the Top Hat Lounge. What was the genesis of all of that?
Well, you know, I'm a huge music fan. I was a big Dead fan back in the 80s, saw him 20-plus times, and just a big music fan in general. So when the Top Hat was on the market, it just looked like a really cool opportunity for us. And So I went in, looked at it, starting really from a real estate standpoint, but as I really dug into that business and the history of the Top Hat and the brand that existed there, I felt there was a really interesting opportunity to reposition it. So that was kind of my foray into entertainment. We did feel that to justify the price of a liquor license, and in the state of Montana, they're expensive, $600,000 to $800,000. To justify that cost, I needed more than just the evening music. So that really caused us to take a hard look at the restaurant and bring a restaurant into the venue. And it was a leap. You know, people hadn't thought about the Top Hat as a restaurant. So there was a really big effort to rebrand the Top Hat and rebrand that whole concept to get people comfortable in thinking about it as a place they'd want to eat as well.
And how did you specifically learn about the restaurant business? I mean, that's a bit, that in of itself kills a lot of people just doing restaurants.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
just a part of your portfolio. How'd you learn about what was going to work and what didn't work and really about running a restaurant business?
You know, I did a lot of research, and I'm of the belief that sometimes you're better off coming into an industry with no experience. A lot of times an industry is just burdened with all of these classic ways of doing things. And in many industries like the restaurant business, those classic ways of doing things aren't right. So I think being able to come in with a fresh perspective is often a good thing. I was a consultant with PricewaterhouseCoopers out of grad school for several years. So that kind of gave me this background to be able to come into a business. In that case, it was mostly Fortune 50 businesses, but be able to come into an industry, a business that I didn't know, come up to speed quickly, and really think about kind of process reengineering, business strategy, repositioning a business. So those skills really positioned me to come into a restaurant.
So you were able to transfer the skills from Pricewaterhouse and from your previous real estate career, the skills and sort of the knowledge and how to get information into this new industry that you had never worked in before.
Yeah, I mean, I think business is business. And to be able to come in with the basic business skills, understanding how costing works, understanding how to read a financial statement, understanding how to set up an operation, understanding how to hire staff, manage staff. Given the service industry, staffing is quite a bit different than real estate development staffing in the healthcare industry. But it's still basically the fundamental principles of running a business.
Okay, so the restaurant piece you can get. But in the booking of entertainment and getting involved in the buying of talent, you chose an enormously competitive industry with egos, you know, histories of problems, you know, in booking acts and filling venues. How did you learn to navigate all of that?
It's a tough business. You know, the entertainment business is a fairly cutthroat business, but so is real estate development. You know, you're dealing with contractors, you're dealing with pretty tough personalities. So that piece of it, you know, I was able to get past. It was a very different process to go through, to put in offers, to reach out to agents. And it's even more complicated by the fact that the rooms, and this gets a little bit into industry speak, but the rooms that I purchased, starting with the Tapa and then following with the Wilma, had promoters, outside promoters, already in them. So in our industry, in the entertainment industry, agents call that history. A promoter promotes events in a room in a given market. That artist that they did that with in the past, they have that history. So to break that history and essentially be able to work directly with agents was difficult. And getting the industry and those agents to abandon their history with the promoter and work with an in-house buyer directly with the venue took a while. And the Top Hat was a slow process to get that kind of control back into the venue. But we felt that was essential to gain that control back. Because for me, one thing that this industry does a poor job of, particularly the venue side of it, is they don't brand well. They don't brand their venues. They don't brand their overall service. They don't sell that venue as much as they just sell individual artists. And we felt it's very important to create an experience, create a venue, create a place where people want to go.
So where in Missoula, Montana, did you find the talent to help you? You can't do this as a one-man band, right? You have to have a staff. Where'd you find the folks?
You know, actually, a lot of them have come out of the entertainment management program here at the university. So actually, my entire staff on the entertainment side has come out of the university's program.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it is. And they're young, and they were all fairly inexperienced. But again, that kind of goes to my hiring philosophy is I'd rather have young people without a lot of experience that I found to be very bright, great work ethic, and then you can train them in the way you want to do things. We do things as a venue different than other venues, and to have the ability to kind of mold those folks in a way that works with our model has been a huge advantage, and every single one of those hires is still with us, and we keep hiring out of the program.
That's tremendous. You also have the flexibility of having three different size venues, right? So what's the seating capacity at the three venues you're working with now?
So the Top Hat is a 550 capacity club, we'll call it, when it's not a restaurant. The Wilma is a 1500 capacity club theater, also can be seated at 850 capacity. And then the Kettle House Amphitheater is 4,250 capacity.
So for our listeners, with this array of venues, you know, in recent times, you've been able to bring in some of the best acts in the country. I mean, you've had folks like Jason Isbell and Cody Jinks and Lake Street Drive and you know, Trombone Shorty and Pat Benatar and Slayer and Primus and Lyle Lovett. And how has that all fit into the, is there an audience here for all of that?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's probably the biggest surprise of the Western Montana market is the appetite for music and the willingness of them, our customers, to spend as large a portion of their disposable income as they do on entertainment. You know, my theory is that there aren't a lot of entertainment options in Western Montana. You do have the Grizz and you have some minor league baseball, but if you go to Seattle or Portland, the competition for that entertainment dollar is quite intense. When you come to this market, we're one of the main entertainment options available to the customers, so we get a larger share of their entertainment dollar. That's one theory. The other is that Missoula is a highly culture-oriented, very music-oriented community that just loves to come out for music. I don't think many markets have the crossover that Missoula has, where the same customer will check out Slayer, and then three nights later, I'll see him at Jason Isbell. It's just the love of music and kind of seeing different artists is truly unique to Missoula, I think.
And how big a geographic reach does Missoula now have, which is, of course, great for the economic development activities in the community, because if you're reaching a larger area, people come in and stay at hotels and eat at restaurants and shop and do all those things. How big a reach do you have?
I think it's pretty big. I mean, if we looked at the Kettle House Amphitheater on, for instance, Ween, which was a sold-out show, over 20% of those tickets came from more than 250 miles away. So we know for a fact, just by looking at ticket buying patterns, that Salt Lake City, Dallas, and Houston are huge buying markets. Portland and Seattle are fairly significant buying markets. And then Kalispell, Bozeman, Butte, Helena, Great Falls are all active buying markets. So we have a fairly large footprint. And one of our strategies for sure around Kettle House is to make it a destination venue. And as we do that, it's creating packages and experiences for people. So when they come here, it's choose a show and plan a trip around that show. So come here, go fly fishing, go catch your show, do some backpacking, all of these different things. So one of the marketing strategies that we're starting to put in place for next year is come here, experience Montana, and center it on a concert. Doing partnerships with higher-end facilities like the resort at Paws Up, working with fly guides and places like Lewis and Clark Guide Service, all of these things will come into our plan for next year as we really try to brand the Kettle House around that destination.
You're listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs with our guest today, Nick Chakota, talking about the entertainment scene in Missoula, Montana. So to quantify this, and not to divulge any real trade secrets, how many tickets have you sold in the past year to all of your events?
You know, we are estimating, and we're on track for 2017, we'll do about 195,000 tickets in this market, or in our venues, our three venues. And that we've grown from about 170,000, 165,000 tickets last year. So we're on a fairly nice trajectory. I mean, the Wilma right now is ranked the number 69 highest volume sub 2,500 capacity venue in the world. Our promoting company, Logjam Presents, this year will hit the top 100 promoters in the world.
And how long has that been in business?
8 months.
That's really incredible. It's almost too good to be true, right?
Yeah, hopefully it lasts.
So let me ask you this. There's always a dark side. What's gone wrong? I mean, if you're giving advice to people listening who want to get involved in, you know, making an entrepreneurial transformation like you've made, what hasn't worked so good?
Let me think about that for a second. You know, that's a tough question. I mean, obviously operational mistakes all over the place.
Sure.
You know, you launch a 4,500 capacity venue, everything from we were planning on about 5% of those people, 10% of those people eating at the venue, and the first night, 35, 40% of those people ate at the venue.
Yeah.
It was a train wreck. So those kind of little operational things that you can correct. You know, overall, what went wrong? I mean, we probably, if I could do it over, again, in my industry specifically, I'd rip the Band-Aid off faster and would have removed promoters out of the room quicker. I let that drag on for a little while. So that's more of a tactical thing in our industry. Overall, it's gone pretty smooth for us, though. We've had a lot of success in this market.
Is the market saturated, or is there room for growth?
I don't know if I'd call the market saturated, but I think we've hit capacity with this market. And for us, that has us going to other markets for the Kettle House to market towards. If my growth were to continue, it would be into other Montana markets. And it's something we're looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a growth company. I'm a growing, growth-oriented entrepreneur.
Well, you have an appetite for bigger than Missoula, right?
I do.
Good. Good. Well, you have to have a vision for something, particularly when you've put in place in such a short time such an impressive machine, right?
Yeah, and it's this industry is a lot about scale. Every industry is different. You know, in the real estate development industry, it wasn't about scale because it's a few very high level people have to be very hands on in their respective business. This industry is all about scale. It's about things like ticket fees and scaling your operation that you've put in place and your overhead, it scales very well. So as we expand and are able to leverage what we have with staffing, I think that staff will leverage well and let us scale. So,
and how big a staff do you have now?
We're at about 160 people in Missoula.
So you have to be, in some sense, one of the fastest growing companies in the area, right? I mean, you've gone... A lot of those are logjam people, and that's really taken off in the last 8 months.
Yeah, I mean, without getting too much into our specifics, I mean, we've grown, to give you a sense of the growth. When I bought the Top Hat in 2012, the revenue of the business prior to me buying it was about $400,000 annually. We'll probably do about $11 million annually this year.
That's so tremendous. Congratulations. So now I have to ask you this. I asked you the tough question. What was your smartest move so far? I asked you about what went wrong. What's the smartest thing you did?
You know, I think how we positioned the Top Hat early repositioning that is really almost a quasi-private community center, in that there was no cultural center available downtown where all of the arts and the not-for-profits and all these different organizations could come together and do their thing. So we reached out to everything from the ballet academies and did performances like that. We did films. We did just all sorts of cultural events, and really got the demographic comfortable that we were targeting, comfortable with what we were doing. So kind of gets to one of the, I think the smartest thing with repositioning that is we left the college demographic market, which sounds counterintuitive when you live in a college town. But if you think about it, the college-aged consumer is gone at Thanksgiving break, gone over winter break, gone over summer break, gone over spring break. When they are here, they have exams for a week here, week there, week there. When you total it all up, you get a very small amount of time with that buyer. And every 5-6 years, that whole base is gone. So it's a very transient base, where our shift was to target that 25 to 55 age demographic using entertainment to pull them into our network, but really shift the types of shows we were doing to that older demographic, because that demographic has money. They live in Missoula. They're going to stay in Missoula. They're invested in this community, and they're going to keep coming, and they're going to be here for a long time. So we still do college age shows, but our core base is actually that 35 to 55 age group. And it's proven to be a really good strategy for us. And there are other establishments in town that still target the younger demographic, and that's great. But I would say that's not our core focus.
And how do you stay on top of what acts are going to sell? I mean, that's critical to your business, right? You need to have butts in the seats at your events to drive $11 million just at the Top Hat. So how do you get involved and who makes those decisions?
You know, that's probably the hardest thing. I mean, this is legalized gambling, essentially. figuring out what acts to buy and who's going to come to those acts is really tricky. I mean, there's the slam dunks like a Jason Isbell, Tedeschi Trucks, or a Sturgill Simpson, one artist that you know are taking off and are going to sell out. But it's really the toughest room to buy for is the Top Hat. It's not the most risk. The most risk is obviously at the Kettle House because the payments to the artists are much higher. But that kind of developing act and that 200 to 500 person act, you can hit a home run or you can completely strike out. Now, not as much money's at risk on those shows, but it's a much more challenging artist to buy for.
Sure.
It's really tricky. We do a ton of research. I have, fortunately for me, I am surrounded by 100 young people that are all listening to music, and I get a lot of advice for them. I feel them out quite a bit. And, you know, almost every day I spend an hour of my day just doing research on music. And you learn very importantly that you don't buy what you like, you buy what the market wants.
Sure.
If I bought what I liked, I would be bankrupt. I mean, it's, some of my music in this market sells, but a lot of it doesn't. And every once in a while I revert and I buy something that I'm interested in.
Well, you mentioned early on in our conversation that you were coming in with almost a blank slate approach to this, and some of the things you're talking about that you've implemented, you know, speaks to that fact that you're not following in the traditional trends of what, you know, previous producers have done. So my question to you, sort of maybe the last question even for you, is what do you spend most of your time doing?
You know, I probably spend 70%, 60 to 70% of my time researching and buying music. I mean, that's my core job at Logjam and throughout my venues. And then the remaining time is oversight of the overall operations, financial oversight, operational oversight, and marketing. And when I say marketing, I'm not talking tactical day-to-day promoting of the show marketing. I'm talking more branding overview of the venue, because I'm a big believer in branding the corporation. So that's where I spend my time, and I'm a big delegator. So, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm more sales-oriented. I'm more deal-oriented. I have really good people that are more operationally oriented, and I let them do their job within the framework that we set up, and then I don't micromanage them, and I find good people. I hire based on personality and skill set rather than – or personality and kind of functional skill set rather than that they have the exact right experience. I want just really smart people that can learn our system, plug themselves in. I'll invest more in teaching them. Just I want hard work and smart people. And I find that that works a lot better than trying to go out and recruit somebody that has the exact skills that you want, because you're never going to find that exact skill. And yeah, I want people that buy into what we're doing. We're fully staffed where we're at right now. And, you know, we've starting to build up a network where everyone knows everybody. And so we're always open to getting more resumes. But right now we're, I think, in a little bit of a holding pattern. You know, that's an interesting thing, too. We buy or redevelop the Top Hat, we take a step back. We get ourselves in line. We did the Wilma, we take a step back, get ourselves in line. And I mean a year to get ourselves in line. We're doing that with the Kettle House, and we're going to get our operations here where we need them, and then we'll make the next step in growth.
You obviously mentor a lot of young people, because almost your entire staff has come out of the university environment. So lastly, what advice do you have somebody that wants to get into the glamorous world, you know, of entertainment, production, music, buying talent, all of that?
You know, it's not about glamour, I guess, is what I would tell you. It's not about being seen at the front door. It's not about hanging out with artists in the back room. It's not about partying with customers. It's about being very transactional, very focused on your business. It's all business first. So what I always tell my young people is, one, work hard. You're going to work a lot of hours working for me. That's the deal. I'll compensate you well, but you're going to work hard. So you got to want that. If you don't want that, you're not going to fit. But you also are here to do a job. You're not here to have a good time. And I think too often in this industry, these promoters think that they're there to have a good time. And that's, we're running a business, and it's a brand. We have customers, and we need to take care of them first.
You've been listening to Nick Chakota and how he has risen to the top of the music business in Missoula, Montana. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guest contact information and content from previous shows. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Listen next time to hear from James Scott Jr. talking about his work at First Interstate Bank and carrying on the legacy of the Scott family. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity.